It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
UN and Congolese forces prepare to do battle against Hutu rebels. Burundi claims to have killed nearly 100 rebels from eastern DRC. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. The United Nations says preparations are underway for an offensive against Rwandan rebels in eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Spokesman Stéphane Dujarric said the UN mission in Congo has pre-positioned troops to support a planned UN-Congolese offensive against the FDLR, the Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda. Speaking Monday in New York, Dujarric said the January 2nd disarmament deadline passed with no new significant numbers of rebels turning themselves in.
No significant additional surrenders of FDLR combatants have been registered since the initial surrenders in June. The UN mission is working closely with the government and regional and international stakeholders to address the situation.
The FDLR's members include Rwandan Hutu militants who took part in that country's 1994 genocide. Attacks by the FDLR and other rebel groups operating in eastern Congo prompted the UN to create a unique intervention brigade. That force helped the Congolese army defeat the M23 rebel group in North Kivu province nearly more than a year ago. Dujarric, meanwhile, says the UN has supported the Congolese army in a battle against Ugandan ADF rebels in North Kivu January 3rd. He said five of the rebels were killed, two others captured. Officials in Burundi Monday said the army killed nearly 100 rebels who poured across the border from eastern Congo last week. Two Burundian soldiers were killed. The clash occurred in forests about 50 kilometers north of Bujumbura. Government forces captured nine rebels, the group to which they belong, and the reason for the attack are unclear. One government spokesman said the gunmen were looking to set up a base with plans to disrupt Burundi's presidential and parliamentary elections. This is VOA News. Witnesses and military officials say Boko Haram militants Saturday seized a military base in northeast Nigeria, killing dozens of soldiers and civilians. Troops appear to have abandoned the base in the town of Baga after failing to hold off the extremists. And look reports.
One survivor told VOA that, quote, hundreds of insurgents rode into Baga on vehicles and motorbikes, some throwing explosives. They set fire to buildings. There was a fierce firefight. Soldiers resisted, quote, for hours, said an intelligence official in Maiduguri. But that source told VOA that without reinforcements, soldiers could not hold the town. Insurgents had blocked the main roads in or out. Residents fled into the bush or headed for Lake Chad to hop in canoes or try to swim away. Some drowned. Other residents were shot or injured. The number of dead and wounded is not known. A fisherman who got away told VOA that some soldiers were peeling off their uniforms and begging for civilian clothes. He said they appeared to have run out of ammunition. There has been no official response to the attack. In the past, government officials have insisted the war covers a vast territory in the northeast and said the military cannot be everywhere at once. The military base there was the nominal headquarters for a four-country joint task force set up last year to combat trafficking and terrorism. Security analysts told VOA that the loss of Baga raises renewed concerns about the military's level of morale and preparedness. And look, VOA News, Dakar.
The Ebola death toll in West Africa has now risen above 8,000. The World Health Organization said Monday the death toll is now 8,153 with more than 20,000 known cases. Sierra Leone continues to have the most infections with nearly 10,000. Outgoing UN Special Representative on Ebola, Anthony Banbury, says great strides have been made in combating the disease, but many months of tough work remain ahead.
It's going to be extremely hard for us to bring it down to zero, but that is what we will do. That is the only acceptable outcome. Anything short of that will be failure, but we will succeed. The world will succeed in ending Ebola.
He says the three most affected countries, Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia, now have the capacity to isolate and treat all Ebola patients. Liberia announced Monday it plans to reopen schools in February, 6 months after they were ordered closed to stop the spread of Ebola. The country has seen a steady decrease in cases in recent weeks. Five people are dead after gunmen suspected to be al-Qaeda militants attacked an army post in central Mali. The attack occurred overnight in Nampala, a town about 530 kilometers northeast of Bamako and near the border with Mauritania. There was no immediate claim of responsibility. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Some Gambians say the U.S. is not on the side of democracy for arresting two U.S. Gambian nationals alleged to be involved in last week's attempted coup.
Any charge against any Gambian who is fighting to restore democracy in the Gambia is nothing but an endorsement of tyranny in the Gambia.
Pastor Mbajao is the spokesman for the Democratic Union of Gambian activists in the diaspora. The trial of Ethiopian bloggers, known as Zone 9, has again been adjourned. Zimbabwe authorities seek help after a heavy weekend of flooding, and Liberian schools will reopen in early February since they were closed in July due to Ebola.
We saw that with the downward trend in the Ebola epidemic spread, we needed to take the chance to open schools so that children can get back to the learning path.
Anthony Nimler is the Liberia's Deputy Minister of Education for Administration, Research and Development. The Arab League calls for action and dialogue in Libya, and our Africa Baby Boom series continues this morning with a look at parental leave. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Some Gambians in the diaspora say two men charged by U.S. prosecutors for conspiring to overthrow Gambian President Yahya Jammeh in a failed coup attempt are liberators of what they call the oppressed people of the Gambia. The U.S. Justice Department said Monday that Papa Fowl, who holds a dual U.S. Gambian citizenship, and U.S. resident Cherno Unjai were arrested in the United States upon their return from the Gambia, where they had gone to help launch a December 30th coup attempt. The two are charged with conspiring to violate the Neutrality Act, which prohibits U.S. citizens of residents from taking up arms or plotting against a nation at peace with America. But Pasamba Jao, spokesman for the Democratic Union of Gambian Activists in the Diaspora, said any charge against any Gambian who is fighting to restore democracy in the Gambia is nothing but an endorsement of tyranny in the Gambia.
We received the news with utter shock because we believe that as Gambians who've been under oppression and subjugation for 20 years, being that the government that we have there has refused to accord Gambians any legal means of determining their manner of government, that we are left with what President Kennedy said, which is that those who make peaceful revolution possible will make violent revolution inevitable. And so we believe that the United States has really slapped the face of Gambians by standing with the dictatorship in the Gambia, because any charge against any Gambian who is fighting to restore democracy in the Gambia is nothing but an endorsement of tyranny in the Gambia.
I wonder if these two gentlemen are United States citizens. Are they United States citizens?
Yes. They are United States citizens, very, very outstanding, upright citizens of this country. Mr. Cherno Unjai, who is a very generous Gambian, very successful businessman in Texas, and Mr. Papa Fowl, an academic, and who also served in the U.S. Army to promote and defend democracy and liberty around the world. So these are people who are not only committed to the ideals of democracy, but are very honest, upright citizens who feel the need that they cannot continue to sit in the comfort of their apartments or houses in the United States while the Gambian people continue to be oppressed. So we believe that these are the best citizens that anybody can have.
But do you understand from the United States government point of view that the mere fact that they were undertaken to go and overthrow a sovereign government violates what they call the Neutrality Act, which prohibits U.S. citizens or residents from taking up arms or plotting against a nation which is at peace with the United States?
Well, that's the key word, at peace. Because as we speak, two American citizens, Alhaji Mahmoud Cisse and Ibu Diop, have been kidnapped in the Gambia for over a year now. The United States government is aware of this. The FBI is aware of this. The CIA is aware of this. So you cannot have peace with a country that kidnaps your own citizens. So that doesn't make sense. Now, Gambia is not at peace with the United States, and it is not at peace with the Gambian people. What we have in the Gambia is a rogue state.
Pasamba Jao is the spokesman for the Democratic Union of Gambian Activists in the Diaspora. He spoke with me from Washington, D.C. Authorities in Liberia have announced that schools, which have been closed since July last year because of the Ebola outbreak, will reopen on February 2nd this year. Anthony Nimlin, Deputy Minister of Education for Administration, Research and Development, said the decision was necessary because of the recent decline in the number of cases in the country. But he says students will be required to continue to observe all Ebola protocols and preventive measures.
We have been paying attention to the whole epidemiology of the disease. We've seen that the incidences have gone down drastically in a lot of places. There have been a whole lot of questions, too, in terms of the children out of nest away from school. And the situation is that we already have a lot of students in our school system. And for the long closure of school, may definitely also increase the number of OAH children in our school. And so in consultation with different authorities, including the health authorities, we thought that with the downward trend in the Ebola epidemic spread, we needed to take the chance to open schools so that children can get back to the learning process.
Hygiene-wise, Ebola does not like too many people getting close to each other. So what sort of preparedness, what measures do you have in place? So when schools open, as you know, students are always close to each other. What measures do you have for the schools?
The first thing is that we're going to ensure that the physical environment itself is disinfected, that is in terms of fumigation. And we're going to make sure that every school has a hand washing station. We try to target a minimum of like 3 thermometers per school where students will be checked before entering the classes to make sure their hands are washed. They have the water, the soap, the bleach, and those necessary things for the washing of hands. And we're also considering the fact that we can have an isolation center where students and teachers are tested. And after they're tested, if you suspect that their temperature or they have a sign of fever, you can hold them in isolation and have a referral to the nearby health center.
Mr. Deputy Minister, the schools did not end the academic year and they were closed. So what happens now? Does Liberia start a brand new school year or what do you do?
What we're doing is to ensure that the things to be considered right now, we run a curriculum. The curriculum has a certain number of hours to run the school year. So what we've done is to have adjusted the timing to ensure that the number of hours required for complete exhaustion of the school curriculum is being used. So we might have some longer hours in school compared to what was usually the time spent so that we can be able to catch up on the timing that was lost.
Does this affect the entire school system in Liberia or just a portion of the school system?
It's going to affect the entire school system, but all of the schools are not just going to open at about 7:00. We're going to have a phase in there by which we're going to open the school. So Ebola epidemic in terms of the region right now, we have different areas. So we have high intensity, medium, and the low intensity areas. We're going to have a phase in the system with the opening of school.
Anthony Nimler is Liberia's Deputy Minister of Education for Administration, Research and Development. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. The trial of the Ethiopian bloggers known as Zone 9 has been adjourned again after prosecutors failed to amend terrorism charges as ordered by the court. The development raises the likelihood that some of the charges against the young bloggers and journalists may be dropped. Martha van der Wolf reports for VOA from Addis Ababa.
The 6 members of the bloggers collective Zone 9 and 3 affiliated journalists were imprisoned in April, accused of using social media to incite violence in Ethiopia. They were charged under Ethiopia's anti-terrorism law in July. Amha Mekonnen is the lawyer for 8 of the 9 defendants. He says if the prosecution does not properly amend the charges at the next hearing, the judges will exclude those charges, one of which is related to digital training the defendants allegedly received.
This is the last chance given to the prosecution. The court is accepting our request. If next time the prosecution is not able to make clear or amend the charge as per the order of the court, these 4 ingredients or elements will be excluded, will be cancelled from the statement of the charge.
The court Monday accepted other charges, that the defendants formed a clandestine organization, incited attempted and organized damage to the community, and planned terrorist acts as outlined in Ethiopia's anti-terrorism proclamation. Lawyer Amaha says it would be good for the Zone 9 bloggers and journalists if the prosecution fails to amend the remaining charges.
It has got only six types of human behaviors that are regarded as terrorist acts. Okay? So in order for one to be accused of plotting a terrorism act, it is compulsory to mention one or two of the terrorist acts listed under Article 3. They were not there. But when they amended, they introduced one act. The law itself is not clear in that kind. Yeah? Simply, if someone plots to cause damage to the community, it amounts to terrorism.
International human rights organizations have repeatedly criticized Ethiopia's anti-terrorism proclamation for its vagueness and its use as a tool to silence dissidents. A recent study of the Committee to Protect Journalists lists Ethiopia as one of the countries with the most imprisoned journalists. Ethiopia's government insists that those arrested are criminals and not journalists. This is the 15th adjournment in the trial against the Zone 9 bloggers and journalists. The trial is now due to resume on January 14. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 6th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. The Zimbabwean Red Cross says about 800 families have been evacuated from northern parts of the country after they were marooned by heavy flooding over the weekend. Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare for VOA.
Zimbabwe has witnessed incessant rains during the past week, resulting in floods in some parts of the country. On Sunday, police said a family of eight drowned after a car they were traveling in was swept away as they tried to cross a flooded river about 100 kilometers southwest of Harare. In the north, the Zambezi River bordering Zambia overflowed, forcing thousands of people to run to higher ground. They were rescued by Zimbabwe officials driving all-terrain vehicles and sheltered in tents provided by the Red Cross. Red Cross spokesman Tekshua Mazuruse said the organization is still determining the level of help needed for those displaced by the floods. He says the Red Cross has since launched an international appeal to ensure that the flood victims have shelter and food.
In such situation, we apply for disaster relief funds, and we're actually in the process of engaging with our international partners. At a local scale, we're actually appealing to corporates, individuals, and maybe the church to actually come in and support our efforts.
Given Zimbabwe's ailing economy, help is likely to come mainly from the international community, as most companies and individuals are struggling with the day-to-day needs. Last year, floods displaced thousands of Zimbabweans who were living downstream of one of the country's major dams about 400 kilometers south of Harare. In that case, the Air Force of neighboring Namibia helped with the rescue efforts. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
The Arab League is calling for both action and dialogue to prevent the chaotic situation in Libya from getting worse. Libya's representative to the League urged the world to help arm the Libyan army, while the country's parliament speaker called for help in protecting the country's oil infrastructure. Edward Urania reports for VOA from Cairo.
The Arab League meeting on the crisis in Libya took place as a long-awaited national dialogue session of rival leaders in Libya was again postponed. Arab League chief Nabil al-Arabi told delegates to the Cairo conference the solution to the conflict must respect the free will of the Libyan people as well as the sovereignty and unity of the country. He added that the League supports Libya's legitimately elected parliament and the government stemming from it. Al-Arabi stressed that everyone involved must adhere to the principles of dialogue and renounce violence and terrorism.
He says a decisive position must be taken towards all acts of terrorism on Libyan soil, which are leading to chaos and a political and security vacuum in the country. Libya's representative to the League, Ambassador Ashour Bourrashid, said military action must be taken quickly to put an end to bloodshed and urge the international community to help arm the Libyan army. He says every delay in taking action against Islamist militias means there is less chance for a negotiated solution. He also urged the international community to sanction those who are destroying public infrastructure and impeding a solution to the conflict. The Speaker of the Libyan Parliament, elected last June, Akila Saleh, urged Arab states during a press conference after the Cairo meeting to take action to help protect Libya's oil infrastructure. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Africa's population is growing, and the United Nations estimates that 40% of the world's population will live in Africa by 2050. African economies are also growing, along with growth in the workplace. But in some countries, the social and economic forces collide on workplace issues like parental leave. While some countries are moving to extend leave, others are having a hard time enforcing the laws that they already have. Hilary Hulo in Nairobi takes a look at how parenting issues affect the African workforce in the face of the coming baby boom.
As one of Africa's most vibrant economies, Kenya boasts an impressive body of labor legislation. Many of these laws are quite good, says Ernest Nadome, who works for the Central Organization of Trade Unions. He notes Kenya's laws on parental leave, which date back to 2007, should make it easier for women to balance the needs of work and family.
The lady employee is entitled to 3 months maternity leave. And on top of that, the lady employee also will not forfeit the normal annual leave that other male employees enjoy. And at the same time, when you're on maternity leave, you are entitled to your full benefits.
But many Kenyan women say it doesn't always work out that way. Esther Njau gave birth to her daughter Marie 5 months ago. When she got pregnant, she found her small company only offered 2 months of maternity leave, which, she says, is not uncommon. 2 months wasn't enough for her, so she felt she had no choice but to quit.
Most of the private enterprises in Kenya have a problem with maternity leave. Okay, once you're working in a private enterprise, the rules are made by the owner of the company because he's the director. If he says it's 2 months, if you're not comfortable with it, what do? You just quit.
Not only do most employers not provide the 3 months the law requires, says Njau, but very few will actually pay a woman's salary when she's on leave. And many of Njau's friends have had a harder time than she has. Some have been replaced when they went on maternity leave, while others have simply been fired. This poses a serious dilemma to working women who want children, says Njau.
Should I? Should I not? You're so confused. You're earning well, you're living well, but the moment you get pregnant, you're fired or you're replaced. So that's something that can keep you from getting more kids.
Nadome says that in Kenya, unionized workers are usually more successful in fighting for their rights to parental leave. But most Kenyans are not unionized, and many in the informal sector work without any contracts at all. Throughout Africa, countries have begun to grapple with issues of parenting at work. According to a 2010 report by the International Labour Organization, 82% of the 50 African countries studied now provide at least 12 weeks of maternity leave. Many had recently increased it, and South Africa is now under pressure to increase it even more. Ultimately, says Nadome, denying parental leave can have far-reaching social consequences. Hilary Hewler for VOA News, Nairobi.
Twenty-five minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin in handball. Tunisia men's national handball team emerged winners at the Four Nations Yellow Cup in Winterthur, Switzerland on Sunday. They clinched the trophy when they edged hosts Switzerland 26-24 in the final round-robin encounter on Sunday. Tunisia began their campaign with promise when they beat Belarus 34-29 on Friday. On Saturday, they pipped Slovakia 28-27. Switzerland is second ahead of Slovakia, while Belarus lost all their three matches. Tunisia used the contest as a build-up to the World Men's Handball Championships to start in Doha, Qatar on the 17th of January. African champions Algeria, Egypt and Tunisia will represent the continent at the global contest. Turning to athletics, Ethiopian defending champion Mary Dibaba equaled her lifetime best of 2 hours, 19 minutes and 52 seconds to better the women's course record she set last year at the Xiamen International Marathon in China on Saturday. Fellow Ethiopian Meseret Legese followed across the finish line almost 8 minutes later. She was second ahead of Kenyan Miriam Mwangari, who clocked a lifetime best of 2 hours, 27 minutes and 53 seconds. In the men's race, Kenya's former Boston and Chicago Marathon champion Moses Mosop made a comeback to the limelight when he set the men's course record at 2 hours 6 minutes and 19 seconds. Ethiopians Telahun Regesa and Abrar Milawi completed the medal podium. In Spain, Uganda's vastly improved Timothy Toroitich continued his rich vein of form when he won the Zornotze International Cross-Country Meet in Amorebieta on Sunday. His compatriot Moses Kipsiro was runner-up ahead of Ethiopian-born Alemahiu Bezabe of Spain. Kenyan Magdalene Masai won the women's race. In football news, Cameroon's indomitable Lions have converged at the Confederation of African Football CAF Center of Excellence in Mbokomo near Yaoundé to polish up their tactics ahead of their 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations campaign. They host a friendly against the Democratic Republic of Congo tomorrow, Wednesday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Omer in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Tuesday morning, January 6th.
Good morning, Daybreak Africa. And I just want to say happy new year to you guys out there in the year. April 2015. This is Emma Stewart here in Freetown, Sierra, and we're still alive and taking the protection that you're giving us, your authority information on Ebola, and also the information we're getting here, the sensitization we're getting from the Ministry of Health and Sierra. The numbers are actually going down in Freetown area, I believe. And I hope that come the end of January to February, we'll be able to contain this Ebola disease. One from them still here from Freetown. Thank you, Dimitri Kapula.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Two U.S. citizens are facing charges for their alleged role in last week's coup attempt in the Gambia. The U.S. Justice Department says 57-year-old Cherno Unjai and 46-year-old Papa Fowl are both in custody and were expected to make their initial court appearances on Monday. Unjai in Baltimore, Maryland, and Fowl in Minneapolis, Minnesota. That's it for this Tuesday, January 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Marco Uman, along with our engineer, I am James Barton in Washington, saying have a nice day.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the Internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone Subscribe to VOA News Feeds.